troops have already deserted to the Goths. If the war could be achieved by the presence of Belisarius alone, your wishes are satisfied. Belisarius is in the midst of Italy. But if you desire to conquer, far other preparations are requisite. Without a military force, the title of general is an empty name. It would be expedient to restore to my service my own veterans and domestic guards. Before I can take the field, I must receive an adequate supply of light and heavy armed troops, and it is only with ready money that you can procure the indispensable aid of a powerful body of the cavalry of the Huns. An officer in whom Belisarius confided was sent from Ravenna to hasten and conduct the succours, but the message was neglected, and the messenger was detained at Constantinople by an advantageous marriage.
Totila took Rome and threatened to reduce it to rubble, fit only for grazing cattle upon. Belisarius admonished the barbarian, warning him not to sully his fame by destroying that which was a glory to the dead and a delight to the living. Totila desisted from his threat and withdrew from Rome a short distance, the more easily to observe the plans and movements of the indefatigable Belisarius. Belisarius entered Rome a second time in 547 AD and repaired what he could of the damage wrought by Totila, who swiftly returned. Thrice the army of Belisarius repulsed the hordes of Totila, but eventually Belisarius was commanded by Justinian to return to Constantinople, ordered to leave a garrison behind in Rome sufficient to protect it from the barbarians. Gibbon discusses upon the games of antiquity. He writes that a material difference may be observed in the games. The most eminent of the Greeks were actors, the Romans merely spectators. He says, "The Olympic Stadium was open to wealth, merit, and ambition, and if the candidates could depend on their personal skill and activity, they might pursue the footsteps of Diomede and Menelaus and conduct their horses in the rapid career. But a senator, or even a citizen, conscious of his dignity, would have blushed to expose his person or his horses in the circus of Rome." In early chariot races in Rome, the contest was simply between two chariots, whose drivers were distinguished by white and red liveries. Later, light green and cerulean blue were added. These four factions soon acquired, says Gibbon, a legal establishment and a mysterious origin, and their fanciful colours were derived from the various appearance of nature in the four seasons of the year. The opposition of Prasini, green, and Veneti, blue, became particularly significant, first of all in Rome, and then Constantinople.
The struggle of the green and blue was supposed to represent the conflict of the earth and sea. Their respective victories announced either a plentiful harvest or a prosperous navigation, and the hostility of the husbandmen and mariners was somewhat less absurd than the blind ardour of the Roman people who devoted their lives and fortunes to the colour which they had espoused. Such folly was disdained and indulged by the wisest princes. But the names of Caligula, Nero, Vitellius, Verus, Commodus, Caracalla, and Elagabalus were enrolled in the blue or green factions of the circus. They frequented their stables, applauded their favourites, chastised their antagonists, and deserved the esteem of the populace by the natural or affected imitation of their manners. The bloody and tumultuous contest continued to disturb the public festivity till the last age of the spectacles of Rome, and Theodoric, from a motive of justice or affection, interposed his authority to protect the Greens against the violence of a consul and a patrician who were passionately addicted to the blue faction of the circus. Constantinople adopted the follies, though not the virtues, of ancient Rome, and the same factions which had agitated the circus raged with redoubled fury in the Hippodrome. Under the reign of Anastasius, this popular frenzy was inflamed by religious zeal, and the Greens, who had treacherously concealed the stones and daggers under baskets of fruit, massacred at a solemn festival 3,000 of their blue adversaries. From the capital, this pestilence was diffused into the provinces and cities of the East, and the sportive distinction of two colours produced two strong and irreconcilable factions which shook the foundations of a feeble government. The popular dissensions found